6. Verbs, person, and tense. The old woman dreamed of the past as she navigated the seas of time. In language, verbs are what do things. The person of the verb is who does them, a name or a pronoun, and the tense of the verb is when they do it. Some how-to-write books give the impression that verbs do everything. Action is all. I don't go along with that. But still, verbs matter, and the person and the tense of the verb matter a lot in telling stories. Person of the verb. Nonfiction, except for autobiography, has to be written in the third person. To write about Napoleon or a bacillus in the first person is to write fiction. The persons available to fictional narrative are first singular, I, and third singular, she, he, with limited use of first and third plural, we, they. Use of the second person, you, in fiction is justifiably rare. Every so often somebody writes a story or novel in the second person under the impression that it hasn't been done before. Almost all preliterate, sacred, and literary prose narrative before the 16th century is in the third person. First-person writing turns up first in Cicero's letters, in medieval diaries and saints' confessions with Montaigne and Erasmus, and in early travel narratives. In fiction, authors at first felt they had to justify presenting a character in the first person. A letter writer naturally writes, I, hence the epistolary novel. Since the 18th century, fiction written in the first person has been so common that we think little about it. But in fact, it's an odd, sophisticated, artificial, imaginative process both for the writer and for the reader. Who is this I? It isn't the writer, because it's a fictional self. And though I, the reader, may identify with it, it's not me either. Telling a story in the third person remains the commonest and least troublesome mode. The author uses it to move freely about, telling what he did and she did, and also what they thought. First-person narrative is the ancestor of narrative in the limited third person. This is a technical literary term, meaning that the writer limits narration to the point of view of one character. The writer can tell explicitly only what that one character perceives, feels, knows, remembers, or guesses. In other words, it's very like writing in the first person. I'll talk about this in the chapter on point of view, along with the equally important topic of limited versus multiple third person. It all sounds very technical, but it really is important. If it comes up at all, the choice of whether to write a piece of fiction in first person or third person is a big one. Sometimes you never have to give a thought to what person to tell a story in, but sometimes a story you start telling as I gets stuck, and what it needs is to get out of the first person. Sometimes a story that starts out with he said or she went needs to get out of the third person into the I voice. When a story keeps sticking or gets stuck, keep the possibility of that change of person in mind. Further reading. First-person narration, however tricky, is so common both in fiction and in memoir that I hesitate to single out any book or books from the thousands of excellent examples of it. But I do urge you to read anything written by Grace Paley. Her stories avoid all the pitfalls of first-person narration, posing, egotism, self-consciousness, monotony. They seem like artless little things, just some woman telling you about something. they are masterpieces of art. And again, so many modern stories and novels are told in the limited third person that recommendation becomes arbitrary. But I recommend that, for a while at least, you notice what persons, the book you're reading is written in, and whether and when and how it changes person. Tenses of the verb. The past tense, she did it, he was there. And the present tense, she does it, he is there, are both capable of variations expressing such things as continuity of action and how events relate in time. She was making a living before he'd even begun looking for a job. Priority or subsequence in time is easy to express in the past tense, but the present tense is less flexible, tending to cling to the present. She is making a living before he even begins to look for a job. Abstract discourse is always in the present tense. I'm writing it right now. Generalities aren't time-bound, and so philosophers, physicists, mathematicians, and God all speak in the present tense. Footnote. Seeking equal authority, anthropologists used to write, the Usu worship forest spirits, ignoring the fact that the last three living Usu were Mormon converts working for a lumber mill. An example of how ethical issues can get attached to something that seems as utterly value neutral as a verb tense. The misuse of language induces evil in the soul. End of footnote. Screenplays appear to be in the present tense, but they're actually in the imperative voice. They're instructions. They say what is to happen on screen. Dick grins at Jane. Fires. Blood spatters lens. Close up. Spot falls dead. These aren't descriptions. They tell the actors, cameraman, ketchup person, dog, and everybody else what to do. We use the present tense above all in talking, in conversation. How are you? I'm fine, thanks. As soon as we start narrating, we tend naturally to drop into the past tense. What happened? I backed into a car that was backing out of where it was parked. Eyewitness narration is, of course, in the present tense. Oh, my God, it's catching fire! Or, he's crossing the 50-yard line. He's in the clear now. Or in the communication that tells you about the tasty fugu fish your friend is eating as he tweets to you just before he dies in agony. For several thousand years, stories were told and written mainly in the past tenses, with an occasional dramatic passage in what was then called the historical present. For the past 30 years or so, many writers have been using only the present tense for narratives, fictional and non-fictional. By now, the present tense is so omnipresent that young writers may think it's obligatory. A very young one said to me, "The old dead writers lived in the past, so they couldn't write in the present, but we can." Evidently, the mere name, present tense, leads people to assume that it's about now and that the past tense is about long ago. This is awfully naive. Verb tenses have so little connotation of actual presentness or pastness that they are in most respects interchangeable. The thing to remember is that, after all, a written story, whether it's imaginary or based on real events, exists only on the page. Both present tense and past tense narration are totally fictive. Present tense narration persuades people that it's more real because it sounds like eyewitness narration. And the reason most writers give for using it is that it's more immediate. Some justify it aggressively. We live in the present, not the past. Well, to live in the present only would be to live in the world of newborn infants or of people who have lost their long-term memory. Living in the present isn't all that easy for most of us. Being present in the present, really living in it, is one of the goals of awareness meditation, which people practice for years. Being human, we spend most of the time with our head full of what is not right here, right now. Thinking about this, wondering about that, remembering something, planning to do something else, talking to somebody somewhere on a cell phone, texting somebody else, and only occasionally trying to put it all together to become aware of, to make sense of, the present moment. I see the big difference between the past and present tenses not as immediacy, but as complexity and size of field. A story told in the present tense is necessarily focused on action in a single time and, therefore, a single place. Use of the past tenses allows continual referring back and forth in time and space. That's how our minds normally work, moving around easily. Only in emergency situations do they focus very tightly on what's going on. And so narration in the present tense sets up a kind of permanent, artificial emergency, which can be exactly the right tone for fast-paced action. The past tense can also focus tightly, but it always gives access to time before and after the moment of the narrative. The moment it describes is a moment continuous with its past and its future. The difference is like the difference between a narrow-beam flashlight and sunlight. One shows a small, intense, brightly lit field with nothing around it. The other shows the world. The quality of limitation may attract a writer to the present tense. Its tightly focused beam of attention affords the writer and reader the detachment of visible artifice. It brings the field very close, like a microscope, yet distances by eliminating the surround. It cuts out, minimizes. It keeps the story cool. It can be a wise choice for a writer whose engine is liable to overheat. It also reflects the huge influence of film, not screenplay, on our imaginations. Excellent writers, James Tiptree Jr. among them, have said that they see the action of the story as they write it, exactly like a film. So their use of the present tense is a kind of imaginary eyewitness reporting. These limitations and implications of present tense narration are worth thinking about. The novelist Lynn Sharon Schwartz argued that present tense narration, avoiding temporal context and historical trajectory, oversimplifies, suggesting that nothing is terribly complex and that understanding, such as it is, can be achieved by naming objects or accumulating data, and that all we can ever understand is what can be understood from a glimpse. This externality and narrowness of its field of vision may be why so much present tense narrative sounds cool, flat, unemotional, uninvolved, and therefore all rather alike. I suspect some people write in the present tense because they're afraid not to. She had had some trouble with the past perfect tense in an earlier life. In her next life, she will not be going to have any trouble with the future perfect tense. But she would have liked never to have had any trouble at all. You may not have learned all the fancy names for the various tenses, but don't worry. You know how to do it. All that stuff is in your head, and has been ever since you learned to say, "I went," instead of, "I goed." Footnote. At the beginning of one of my books, I wrote, "The people in this book might be going to have lived a long, long time from now in Northern California." That is, I think, the active voice, progressive conjugation, potential mood, present tense, third-person plural of go, inflecting the past infinitive of live. I deliberately used this magnificent conglomeration of verbiage to establish myself and the reader as pretending to look back in time on some fictional people whom we are at the same time pretending might exist in a time far in our future. You can say all that with a couple of verb forms. The copy editor was amazingly civil about my grand verb. One reviewer, apparently, was unable to get to the end of it and whined about it. Others cited it with what I hope was amusement or admiration. I still like it. It was the shortest way to say exactly what I meant. That's what verbs, in all their moods and tenses, are for. End of footnote. If you always write and read in present tense, some of the verb forms in your head may not have been activated for a long time. To regain free use of them is to increase your range of options as a storyteller. All art involves limitation, but a writer who uses only one tense seems a bit like a painter who, out of a whole set of oil paints, uses only pink. My general point is this. At the moment, the present tense is in fashion. But if you're not comfortable with it, don't let yourself be crowded into using it. For some people and some stories, it's right. For others, not. The choice is important and entirely up to you. On two-timing, I could almost state this as a rule, but I won't, because good and careful writers will blow all rules of writing into bits. So I state it as a high probability. It is highly probable that if you keep changing the tense of your narrative, if you go back and forth between past and present tense frequently and without some kind of signal, a line break, a dingbat, a new chapter, your reader will get all mixed up and will not know what happened before what and what's happening after what and when we are or were at the moment. Such confusions can occur even when writers switch tenses deliberately, when they do it without knowing they're doing it, when they're simply unconscious of what tense they're writing in and go flipping from present to past to present. It is highly probable that the reader will not understand what happened, let alone when, and will end up seasick, sullen, and indifferent. The following short passage is from a modern novel. Not wanting to embarrass the author, I change names and actions to make the scene unrecognizable, but I reproduce the syntax and the verb numbers and tenses exactly. They both come in wanting coffee. We hear Janice playing the TV in the other room. I noticed Tom had a black eye that I didn't see last night. "Did you go out?" I said. Tom sits down with the paper and says nothing. Alex says, "We both went out." I drank two cups of coffee before I said anything. Is it possible to read this without noticing that it changes tense three times in six lines? To be exact, it changes tense five times, since the simple past, "I didn't see," refers to a time previous to the present. But it occurs in a past tense sentence, where a previous time would normally be indicated by the past perfect, "I hadn't seen." Is it possible to say that anything is gained by this incoherence, which continues throughout the book? I can't believe that the author was even aware of it. But that's an awful thing to say. A tense switch in written narrative isn't a minor thing. It's a big deal. Like changing viewpoint characters. It can't be done mindlessly. It can be done invisibly, but only if you know what you're doing. So make sure, if you change tenses in mid-story, that you know you're doing it and why. And if you do it, make sure you carry your readers effortlessly with you and don't maroon them. Like the hapless crew of the Enterprise in a temporal anomaly that they can get out of only by using warp speed 10. Opinion piece on the passive voice. I introduced this topic in Chapter 2, page 16, talking about fake rules. Many verbs have an active and a passive voice. To change the voice reverses the subject and object of the verb. Active, she hit him. Passive, he was hit by her. Passive constructions, such as those used in the sentence presently being read by you, are far too frequently employed in the writing of academic papers and business correspondence. Those whose efforts have been to see this usage reduced are to be commended by all those by whom English is spoken. Now, rewrite that paragraph in the active voice. Too many people who yatter on about you should never use the passive voice don't even know what it is. Many have confused it with the verb to be, which grammarians so sweetly call the copulative, and which doesn't even have a passive voice. And so they go around telling us not to use the verb to be. Most verbs are more exact and colorful than that one. But you tell me how else Hamlet should have started his soliloquy, or how Jehovah should have created light. It was proposed that the motion be tabled by the committee. Two passives. Mrs. Brown proposed that the committee hang the chairman. Two actives. People often use the passive voice because it's indirect, polite, unaggressive, and admirably suited to making thoughts seem as if nobody had personally thought them, and deeds seem as if nobody had done them, so that nobody need take responsibility. Writers who want to take responsibility are wary of it. The cowardly writer says, "It is believed that being is constituted by ratiocination." The brave writer says, "I think, therefore, I am." If your style has been corrupted by long exposure to academies or scientific or business English, you may need to worry about the passive. Make sure it hasn't seated itself where it doesn't belong. If it has, root it out as needed. Where it does belong, we ought to use it freely. It is one of the lovely versatilities of the verb. Example, see number 12 on page 77. One of the examples for the next chapter from Charles Dickens's Bleak House is also the example for this one, because it dramatically demonstrates changes of both person and tense within a narrative. Dickens, of course, doesn't two-time us. He knows exactly what tense he's using, when, and why. But he does something very risky. Right through the long book, he switches back and forth. One chapter is in the third-person present tense, the next in the first-person past tense. Even in Dickens's hands, this alternation causes some awkwardness. But it's very interesting to see how it works and when it doesn't, and to compare the different effects. It's where I first got the idea that the present tense affords intense focus and detached affect, while past tense narration gives a better sense of the continuity, variety, and depth of experience. The exercise is intended to bring out the difference a change of person and tense can make. Exercise 6. The old woman. This should run to a page or so. Keep it short and not too ambitious, because you're going to write the same story twice. The subject is this. An old woman is busy doing something, washing the dishes, or gardening, or editing a PhD dissertation in mathematics, whatever you like, as she thinks about an event that happened in her youth. You're going to intercut between the two times. Now is where she is and what she's doing. Then is her memory of something that happened when she was young. Your narration will move back and forth between now and then. You will make at least two of these moves or time jumps. Version 1, person. Choose either first person, I, or third person, she. Tense. Tell it all in the past tense or all in the present tense. Make the shifts between now and then in her mind clear to the reader. Don't two-time us, but be subtle about it if you can. Version 2. Write the same story. Person. Use the person of the verb you didn't use in version 1. Tense. Choose A, present tense, for now, past tense, for then. Or B, past tense, for now, present tense, for then. Don't try to keep the wording of the two versions identical. Don't just go through it on your computer, changing the pronoun on the verb endings. Write it over. Changing the person and tense will bring about some changes in the wording, the telling, the feeling of the piece. And that's what the exercise is all about. Additional option. If you want to go on and play with other person, tense options, do. Critiquing. Consider the ease or awkwardness of the time shifts. How well suited the tenses chosen are to the material. Which pronoun and which choice or combination of tenses worked best for this story, whether there's much difference between the two versions, and if there is, what it is. To think or talk about after writing. Were you more at ease writing past or present tense, first or third person? Why? It can be useful to read narrative prose with a particular consciousness of what persons and tenses of the verb are used, why the author may have used them, how well they're used, what effect they give, whether and how often, and why the narrative tense is changed.